Views, information, or opinions contained in podcasts do not necessarily represent the opinions, standards, or policies of DRWF. The inclusion of details about products or services does not indicate DRWF endorsement of them. The aim of podcasts is to educate and inform, and we endeavour to ensure that the information provided in them is accurate. It's not a substitute for medical or health advice from a healthcare professional who's aware of the facts and circumstances of your individual situation. We always recommend that advice be sought from your GP or diabetes nurse before making any changes to medication or before using any products or services referenced by DRWF. Neither DRWF nor any of its employees or owners shall be held liable or responsible for the accuracy or completeness, for any errors or omissions in podcasts, or for any damage you may suffer as a result of failing to seek competent medical or health advice from a professional who is familiar with your situation.
Hello, and welcome to the latest podcast in our series, Living with Diabetes, brought to you by Diabetes Research and Wellness Foundation. I'm Claire Levy, and in this edition we have the first in a short series on women's health. In this episode, I'm talking with Sarah Bull, the Member of Parliament for South Northamptonshire. She was diagnosed with late-onset type 1 diabetes less than 5 years ago, when she was 33. Sarah is also the Vice-Chair of the All-Party Parliamentary Group on Diabetes. I'm really pleased to say she's joining us online. Hi, Sarah. Thanks for coming on the show. Maybe you could start by just giving us a brief summary of your early life and discovering you had type 1 diabetes.
Yes, of course. So I grew up in Rutland, so not too far from my current seat where I represent now. But I had a very lovely childhood and a family support. I've got an older brother and an older sister, so I'm the baby of the family. But basically, yes, I went to Stanford High School for Girls, went through all my A-levels, got a place to read history at Oxford. So I did that for 3 years, and then I converted to law. So I did a law conversion course. And then I've basically for 12 years was practicing as a commercial property lawyer. So first at Clifford Chance, and then I moved to a firm called Forsters. And then in the last year, Member of Parliament. So things have changed a little bit. But for me, the diabetes, I had late onset. So actually it was only in 2021, so only about 4 years ago, that I was diagnosed. So that obviously had a huge impact on my life.
Yeah. So what was your reaction to that diagnosis? How was it been managed? And what level of support did you get at the time?
So I was completely shocked. I thought that type 1 particularly came in childhood. I had no idea you could get it as an adult. And I missed all the signs. I now know the four T's, and looking back, I can see it. I mean, I started losing weight and I just thought, oh, ka-ching, this is amazing. I can eat anything. But when I think about it, I was ridiculously tired, you know, and I was a bit more thirsty. And, you know, it's the signs were there, but it was just I happened to go to the doctors for something else. And they just said, can we just do a quick blood test? And so I was like, okay, I don't think you'll find anything. Working as a lawyer, I'm always was tired. So I didn't think anything would happen. And then I got a telephone call 2 days later saying, oh, can you come in? Because we need to run some tests. We think it could be type 2. And that was a surprise enough. And then once they did the testing, went straight to hospital. And then they were like, no, this is type 1. And yeah, my world flipped 180, 360 in that period. But I would say my family and everyone around me have been incredibly supportive. And I think I've met possibly the nicest community you can ever meet with in type 1. So, you know, I feel like I've been supported along the way. But oh, my goodness, that was a world changing shock because we had no family history. So I was literally the first person.
So what's it like for you now with your busy career as an MP living and working with type 1 diabetes? What do you have to do?
I think it has its challenges. I mean, anyone living with type 1 just knows that you're constantly, this is a 24-hour condition, from the moment you wake up to the moment you go to sleep, and even when you're asleep, there's always things that are happening. And yes, it is busy, but I think where I'm quite lucky is that the Speaker of the House, Lindsay Hoyle, he also has type 1 and he had late onset. So there is within the House of Commons already other people like Baroness May as well, Theresa May has it. There are a few of us around, and so actually it's incredibly supportive. I think all my friends, because I have tech, which we'll probably come on to later, I make lots of beeping noises and they just call me R2D2 and they just say, "Do you need sweets?" And they're very supportive. They're watching out for the signs. But I think my biggest fear, to be honest, is having a hypo in the chamber itself. The other day I had to stand up for a question and I could see my numbers were going down. It's 3.6 going down, and I'd taken some, sugar on, but it didn't seem to be moving. And I thought, please don't start the alarms going off just as I'm standing up to ask a question. Luckily, it pulled round, but that was one of my fears. And also during my maiden speech, obviously I was my first time speaking. I was so nervous. My blood sugars were rocketing out the stress, which was making my mouth dry, which is the worst thing you want to do when you are trying to give your first speech. But again, got through it. But it's just learning techniques, isn't it, really, as to how to manage.
Yeah, completely. So you are a public figure. You are having to negotiate difficult times, long days, late nights. How are you managing then? Maybe expand a little bit on your day-to-day challenges. You presumably have to make sure you eat regularly. And as you say, you've got your hypo kit with you and your insulin. And or we are going to come on to tech. Are you on a pump?
I am, yes, I am on a
Right.
pump. But you're right, all of these things. I mean, yes, I have to make sure I build in, and my team who are around me are very good at making sure that they know I have to eat at regular intervals. They'll carry sweets, I'll carry sweets. All the doorkeepers in the house also know that you might need some help. So they're all, but everyone is very kind. But it is the unpredictability of the day which can make it difficult. So, for example, debates can go on for 3 to 4 hours. I've known it where I've sort of been sat there for 4 or 5 hours waiting to be called to speak, and it's trying to time when can you leave. So I do try and speak to the speakers or the deputy speaker in the chamber itself to say, "Look, I might just need to slip out now just to get a little bit of food, just to try and keep it going." But it's trying to keep a sort of motion. But the thing I guess I find the best thing about tech, which again we'll come to, is the ability to actually be able to dose myself when I'm in public and it not necessarily be a big thing. People might think I'm slightly rude because I think I'm on the phone, but that's okay. I'd much rather that than, and it means I can control it better because it's a little bit more discreet, which is what I think I've benefited most from. So yeah, it's a challenge, but like with all things with diabetes, we can manage.
So just coming on to your tech, how long have you been using a pump, say? Did you get the CGM first, or has the whole lot come as a package?
Yes, so no, I was quite quick to get onto a CGM. And so originally it was like Freestyle Libre that I was on. And then I've been onto the pump now for nearly 2 years. I have an Omnipod 5, and for me it's just changed. It's been a game changer. I know I was only recently on, a recent diagnosed diabetic. So, I've done the patch with pens, and I think that was very interesting. And I know for some people pens suit them perfectly, but for me, with the ability to be so much more flexible with the tech has really, really helped. And I think it catches in the background when you're perhaps not able to inject. It sort of just helps me monitor the whole thing so much more easily. And my poor fingers are recovered. At least I don't have the whole, the finger pricks anymore. So all of that together just makes life a little bit easier. Obviously, it's still a lot of thought goes into it, but just takes the edge off, which I think is the best part of all.
And knowing where you are all the time, I think, is excellent as well, isn't it? You're not in the dark.
Well, because sometimes you just don't know. Sometimes I think I feel a certain way, and at least I can quickly look on the phone and then be like, "Oh, okay, no, you're all right," or "No, you do need to take action." And again, it just makes it a lot easier. Also, because one of my very good friends is actually scared of needles, so when I did have pens, I'd occasionally forget and sort of whip it out and forget that they were a bit more squeamish. So it saves a bit of embarrassment that way around.
So, you obviously are happy to talk about your diabetes and your tech. Has that always been the case, or at first were you a little bit more?
Oh, I think when I first was diagnosed, I just wasn't sure how people would react to it, because I was shocked myself. But I think, especially with type 1 particularly, knowing there was absolutely nothing I could have done about that, that was just something that happened. And I am such a proud advocate of talking about it because I think people don't understand as well with diabetes the difference between like type 2 and type 1. So many times people have said to me, should you have sweets? And I'm like, well, ironically, exactly is what I need. And so I really want to be quite vocal about this to help teach people, break down the stigmas, and do whatever we can to help find cures in the future, help to live better with it. And so, yeah, I'm very happy to talk about it. Everyone knows me as a diabetes lady, basically. So long may that continue.
So what about thoughts around NHS provision across the country? There is a difference in areas, ICBs, health inequalities. What's your thoughts about poverty and ethnicity? And maybe you're in a good position to think about those things and make some changes.
Well, absolutely. So I'm trying to work with various different groups and charities as well, to raise awareness. You're exactly right that treatment across the country varies depending on where you are. So if you happen to be around a major city, perhaps like London, you're probably more likely to get access to technology or just treatment. Whereas if you live, say, down in Cornwall or up north, other places further away, it's less likely. And I think that's really unfair. And it's something where I'm really advocating that we need to make sure there's a proper rollout that you can get access to the technology if you want it. And also that, that people are having their tests, that people are going for their checkups, because it's surprising. I was quite shocked across the country where a lot of people might have one, they might have the blood test, but they won't get their foot check or they won't get their eye check. And all of these are so important. And particularly as you mentioned about different communities, whether that's, for example, the British, Pakistani or Bangladeshi community often is under reported or not looked at close enough. And the same with the black and ethnic minorities. We really have to, as I said, break down stigmas and encourage people to come in and actually have the testing and be looked after. So it's a condition that affects every, well, many people, and particularly some of those minorities. So yeah, it's something I'm trying to advocate quite loud and clear on.
Yeah, absolutely. And you've got that unique position, understanding how policy is made. Do you think there's enough help? Well, we just said, haven't we? Help and support for people, certainly in the minority communities, I would say, and people who are more likely to develop type 2 diabetes. And that carries with it maybe that stigma around weight and lifestyle and diet, and I'm not always sure that the NHS has the capacity maybe to deal with those differences.
No, and I think you're right on that. But I was first of all say there are absolutely fantastic people working in the NHS across this, and they're doing everything that they can, but there is more that we can always do. This is why I'm trying to work again with different groups about trying to, just, as you said, raise the profile and take away the stigma. And the more people we can encourage, whether that's celebrities of different types, to come forward and just make it normal. We need to see it more on television. We just normalise those discussions and sort of advocate to people that, like with type 2, catching it early at the right point, there's things you can do to reverse it. It's about lifestyle, it's about diet. There is medication if you need it. And so there's also a tsunami of cases coming. There are more and more people are being diagnosed with type 2. It's something that I spoke to the health minister particularly about it the other day, because when it comes to type 1, I'm trying to run some campaigns around screening. I want to get early diagnosis of this, but it's the same with type 2. I said to her, I was like, we need to be getting ahead of this. Wes Streeting, in his 10-year plan for the NHS, talks about preventative medicines. Prime example, I said, is this is something we need to be looking at. So I'm trying to advocate here to make sure we're getting the right access
And
support.
did you follow any education yourself when you were first diagnosed? Did you go on any of the
So
carb
after a
counting?
while, once I'd settled in, they gave me the I went on the Daphne course,
Right.
which was very that was very useful. Another thing that I had was that they had a group called Ladder, which was a combination between St King's and St Guy's and Thomas's, basically, where they got people who were diagnosed all within the first 2 years of diagnosis, a little group of us together, so that we could talk about our experiences with late diagnosis as well. So those all those sort of initiatives are so helpful. And I want to try and encourage more of that, because if there's anything I say is talk, speak out, don't bottle up, because this is quite it's Diabetes, whether it's type 1 or type 2, is quite a big condition to live with. And the worst thing you can do is bottle it up. So the more you can speak to other people and realize that, also just get little ideas and tips. Everyone's body's different. That's the thing. And I think that's the thing that's hardest to understand is what works for me may not work for you. But actually sharing those experiences together and those moments where sometimes it goes right, sometimes it's wrong, but it's a learning curve. But yeah, encouraging people to talk really is the key.
Yeah.
And peer support's really, really,
Oh, 100%.
useful, isn't it?
100%.
What about building up self-management skills and amongst healthcare professionals and the wider public, building up that confidence, getting information out there? I mean, sadly today, there's been the story, and you know about this, about Lila.
Yeah.
Getting that information to healthcare professionals, GPs, to recognise what can we do there?
I think there is a campaign that needs to be run there because I know they do it where they ask now with, say, for example, sepsis, where you've got to just say, could it be sepsis? And equally, I think that's the thought process that has to go through needs to be, could it be diabetes? Is it worth just doing a check in the background? Especially as you said with poor Lila, they thought she had another virus, and actually it turned out she had this undiagnosed behind the scenes, and that's what ultimately caught her. And so I would like it to be that first thought of, could it be? Let's just check. Because as I said with me, people were like, oh no, you can't have it. Like, no way would you have it. And so it's fighting against that attitude to be like, no, you can. And actually just look for these extra signs. And it's better. I would much rather them do a quick test and, rule it out than miss it for just a lack of thought. So that's something I would like to see rolled out more with the NHS.
And what's your involvement been with the early screening programme, ELSA?
So I've just been following that more than anything. So I said what I'm trying to do at the moment is we have an all-party parliamentary group in Parliament where for diabetes where we're looking at all strands. And the one area I'm particularly focusing on, as I said, is having a pilot for I'd love to see a pilot screening for type 1. Obviously, ELSA at this point has been fantastic, looked at over 20,000 children and been able to diagnose or sort of look at them early doors and see. And I would like to see that extended. It's very difficult at this stage to exactly pinpoint because we all come on at different stages. But I think the ELSA study has been fantastic. The government is looking, and I want them because it's just a research program. I'd like that to be expanded further into clinical proper clinical experience there.
I think it would make a huge difference, wouldn't it?
It would.
And
It
then,
would.
as you know, DIWF has funded the work in Oxford with the Islet facility. You have your affinity with Oxford, having attended. What are your thoughts around Islet treatment and management as a potential cure for type 1?
I mean, I think it's fantastic. The idea that we could possibly transfer the sort of islet, which are the cells that produce insulin, into the human body to be able to sort of kickstart the pancreas going again, essentially, is I think that's fantastic. At the moment, obviously, they rely on donor. The ability of this to come from stem cells would be game changing. So I think, whatever we can do to try and support that. I think is fantastic, but in the meantime, help us live well at the same time as trying to find that cure.
As you know, our slogan is staying well until a cure is found. And what are your hopes for a cure in the future, as a sort of casting your view into looking through your
Oh, well, I'm very confident. Certainly in my lifetime, I'm sure we are going to get to a point of finding a cure. There are so many people doing some incredibly fantastic work looking at all different ranges. So I am very optimistic that we will get there. And I'm just only so grateful for literally all the hard work that they do. They don't even have diabetes sometimes, but they commit their lives to it. And I just cannot thank them enough on behalf of all of us for keeping us going and giving us the opportunity to thrive. So I'm just so grateful.
Sarah, you're the Vice Chair of the All Party Parliamentary Group on Diabetes. Can you tell us a little bit about the work of the group and what your aims and ambitions are?
Yes, yeah, so we're a group of cross-party members. So that's both in the House of Commons and in the House of Lords. And essentially, what we're doing is trying to help direct policy from within Parliament itself. So we are looking into type 1. We are looking at sort of supply of tech. We are looking at treatments as well, making sure perhaps that there could be a one-stop shop for everyone to make sure that when they get their blood tests, they do get their eyes and their feet checked at the same time. We're looking at the pilot schemes and screening with type 2. We're definitely looking about what technology could be rolled out for that in the future. So basically, we're trying to look at it in the round, raise greater awareness across Parliament, and see what we can do collectively to advocate for everyone going forward.
Are you happy with a few fun, quick-fire questions to
Of
finish
course,
with?
they're
Lovely.
favourite.
What would your diabetes superhero name be?
Oh, interesting. I think the advocator, as we were talking, I do talk about this a lot, and one of my main roles is just to keep advocating about type 1, type 2, diabetes, spread the word. So I think the advocator,
I
definitely, I
like
think that would
it.
work.
I have to think of a costume for you.
Oh, yeah.
What's harder to manage, do you think, highs or lows?
Oh, I think it depends physically or mentally on this one. I think physically I find the lows the hardest because I don't like the feeling. But mentally, keeping on track of the highs because they're the ones that can cause long-term problems. So I think it's a different battle.
And what is your sweetie go-to hypo fix? Are they jelly babies or a juice box, or do you have something else?
Oh, yeah, no, I'm a devil for sweeties, but my consultant said that's okay. You've got this condition, treat yourself. So any form of sweets is really my preference if I can.
I remember a nurse saying to me, eat the ones you don't like, because otherwise you eat too many.
Oh yeah, I've definitely
Anyway.
gone the other way too many times.
If you could swap your diabetes kit for a day, what would you rather carry, a lightsaber or a magic wand?
Goodness. I mean, I love Star Wars when I was growing up, so I would love a lightsaber, but I think a magic wand I might be able to do a few more things with to help more people. So I'll go for the magic wand, I think.
What's harder to resist, chocolate cake or pizza night?
Oh. Well, actually, if it's just chocolate full stop, I really struggle to resist chocolate. So I'll say that.
Okay. Which is scarier, running out of insulin or running out of Wi-Fi for your phone?
Oh goodness. I actually think insulin is the thing I fear the most. The Wi-Fi though is in this day and age, I mean you can't step away without your phones, but I think insulin is actually my biggest fear.
If insulin came in flavours, which would you choose, chocolate or strawberry?
Oh goodness. Both good. Probably chocolate, I
Yeah,
think. I really
yeah.
have got that sweet. If it was dairy milk flavoured, I know other brands it might, but that's my favourite.
Which is your biggest workout, carrying your diabetes kit bag or running for hypo snacks?
I think it's carrying the kit bag, especially when you're traveling, because I do obviously you have to take all your spares, and that's quite a chunky monkey. I always have hypo snacks close so that I don't have to run too far. So yeah, my bag, I think.
If your diabetes kit had a theme tune, would it be Mission Impossible or Happy by Pharrell?
I think it'd be happy because knowing I've got that keeps me really calm and I know it's doing the right thing. So it's definitely happy.
Which would you have rather on prescription, unlimited coffee or unlimited pizza?
Oh, unlimited coffee. Yes, I need coffee. It's a busy lot of work being done and I'm running around a lot. So definitely coffee.
Brilliant. Which feels like a bigger achievement, remembering all your supplies on a trip or remembering where you left your meter?
The supplies on a trip. Just making sure I've definitely got all the backups.
What's your ultimate oops moment? Injecting and then realizing you don't do this anymore, but I don't know whether you have used the wrong pen, or eating and then realizing you haven't injected yet.
I think the biggest oops was that first when I injected you. I remember doing that with the wrong pen and I panicked. I was just taking on as much orange juice as I possibly could find because I'd definitely done it literally completely the wrong way around.
Yeah.
That was early doors, but. But I often occasionally eat without sometimes getting it quite right. So, yeah.
What's the trickier maths problem? Calculating carbs in a takeaway or splitting a pizza with friends?
I think it's probably calculating the carbs in a takeaway. It's just so difficult to guess sometimes. You try your best, but I'm getting better. I'm getting better, but I'm still, yeah, I think that's the most, it is a lot of maths there.
Yeah, 40, 50. Yeah.
Yeah.
That'll do for now, yeah. And your last one is, if you could swap your diabetes kit bag for one, would it be a Mary Poppins bag or the Batman utility belt?
Oh, I quite like the sound of the Batman utility belt because I think I almost feel like my bag is like Mary Poppins' bag already with all the extra stuff I have. So I think let's go for something cool. Let's go for the utility belt.
That's wonderful. Is there anything else you want to add?
No, again, I just want to reiterate to tell people to speak out when, you know, this condition, there's such a fantastic community of people. We're all here for you. When I first got diagnosed, I didn't actually know anyone who had it. And of all people, I actually contacted Theresa May as her office because I knew she'd had late diagnosis. And she actually, her office arranged to call me when out of nothing 4 years ago for 20 minutes and had a chat. And that was so reassuring. I was like, look, if the future, if the Prime Minister of the country can have type one and do that, then there's nothing that needs to stop me. So my biggest thing to people is just ask questions, reach out, don't be alone on this because we've all gone through it and good days, you have good days and bads, but those good days outweigh it. So please just speak out and keep being persistent as well about treatment because sometimes you do have to keep advocating. If you think something's not right or if you think you need more help, just keep asking. Don't suffer in silence.
DRWF, staying well until a cure is found.
You're listening to Living with Diabetes, the DRWF podcast, and our special series looking at some of the challenges facing women living with diabetes. You can find helpful guidance on all aspects of diabetes, together with details on how to support the charity, fundraising events, news and information on our website at drwf.org.uk. Thanks to all our guests who have helped us explore diabetes and women's health, and to you for joining us. Coming up next time, Dawn Adams, who is living with type 1 and has experienced issues of early symptoms of menopause.
I knew virtually nothing about diabetes. My weight had gone from 8 stone to 5 stone 9 in the space of about 3 months. And I was so tired, I just could not shake off the fatigue. And she said, I have an ambulance on standby waiting to collect you. We thought you were dead. So that was my introduction to what diabetes actually meant and what it was actually all about at its very worst. I then started to have hot flushes, which I know we think of as a very traditional symptom. That came for me about the age of 45. There's very little information about type 1 diabetes and menopause. But I'd reached a point where even socialising, talking to people, going into the workplace to do my job was becoming a massive challenge. I had lost all self-belief, self-confidence, and any sense of being able to function.
This podcast has been supported by Abbott. Living with Diabetes is a Blue Aurora media production for DRWF. Copyright 2025. Diabetes Research and Wellness Foundation. All rights reserved.